You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your ORG Ochoa. He is your 75, Mr. Two-time Super Bowl champion, College Football Hall of Famer, and now fresh off what was hopefully a very Merry Christmas, Tony Casillas. Tony, a very belated but still very Merry Christmas to you, my friend.
You also, my friend. It was kind of a whirlwind. As you know, I travel and went out of town, and there was all this inclement weather back in Dallas, and finally got back today as record. You know, here on Friday, but I haven't talked to you since then. I'm glad that you and yours had a tremendous Christmas, and I got to tell you this: we brought the Christmas in on the right note, and I'm just glad to be back here on the 750 with my boy.
I agree. You know, we hopped on Instagram Live on Thursday, and that was really cool. But it is different to kind of, you know, get back into the podcasting sort of routine that we have. You mentioned that everything kind of worked out. It was a great sort of timing, I think, if you're a Cowboys fan. The Cowboys obviously won the NFC East since we last recorded an episode of the 750. And then the next day was Christmas Eve. You know what I mean? That's just the dream right there. You know what I mean? You get to win the NFC East, and then the next day, if you're traveling, or you got family coming in, whatever the case is, then you open presents. Maybe you got a cap or a T-shirt. Who knows? But and the players got those days off. You know, I mean, I'm sure you can attest to that. It's pretty nice to have had Christmas Eve and Christmas Day off with an extra week under your belt, or not under your belt, ahead of your schedule, I should say, to prepare. Just an overall fantastic sequence of time.
It was, and you know, everyone could go out and buy their NFC East, you know, championship T-shirts and add that under the Christmas tree. And I mean, you couldn't ask for a better gift for, you know, this Cowboys franchise to be able to just go ahead and let's lock up the NFC East and let's look down the road and really prepare for what the bigger prize is. That's hopefully go on more longer in the postseason play than they've had over the last 2.5 decades?
Yeah. Well, so this
it's been a long time.
This whole sort of sequence is really weird to me. I mean, you talk about this a lot. I like to look at sort of hidden things, and a good friend of the show, Bobby Belt, and I, we like to kind of look at commonalities and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that this stretch of time that the Cowboys are in from 2016 to now, these three seasons, they feel a lot like the first three seasons of the Tony Romo era. And I'm talking about 2007 as the first. I know he obviously came in 2006, but his first full season was in 2007. So you look at this, in 07 and 16, the first year of both of these quarterbacks, Romo and Dak, they go 13-3. Their team's awesome, kicking ass, and then just get trounced in the playoffs, devastation. The following year, 2008 and 2017, the team struggles. They can't get it right. They're shooting themselves in the foot. Things are terrible. You know, they really stumble and bumble. And a DeMarcus on their team leads their team, in sacks. DeMarcus Ware then, and DeMarcus Lawrence in 2017. Also, in 2008, a Pennsylvania-based team that we hate won the Super Bowl and the Steelers. And in 2017, the Eagles did it. And then, you know, following that 2008 season, the Cowboys released their number one wide receiver in T.O. Following 2017, the Cowboys released their number one wide receiver in Dez Bryant. Also, in 2009, the Cowboys come back, and a number 19 that plays wide receiver emerges for them, and Miles Austin helps lead them to a division title. Just like, hey, Tony, who wears number 19? Amari Cooper this season, helping the Cowboys kind of cruise their way to a division title. The similarities are weird. I just, you know, we're kind of reliving that is all I'm saying. I know that's a long way to get to a short point, but this feels like that to me. I don't know if it feels like that to you at all.
Well, I like the similarities. I think there's, you know, that's kind of been the storyline for this franchise over the last course of, I would say, the last decade. And, you know, really good during the regular season. add enough players, enough playmakers to hopefully go on to postseason play. But, you know, one and done. And I think that that's – I think you're they're on a course to hopefully get over that, because I think that they really need to kind of solidify the legacy of today, and that's to win at home, because I always thought that's a huge advantage, your first playoff game, because then you're going to go on the road. So you got to have some momentum. And I think, you know, for, you know, this franchise to grow, RJ, and I love how you talk about irony all the time, because there's a lot of irony to it. And I think as a player, you kind of, you know, the history, you look back, and I don't care if you're a rookie in a National Football League or a six or, you know, 6 year vet. I mean, this is one of the youngest teams in the National Football League, but I think you understand the symbolic part of that, and playing football for so many years, there's always these you know, these barometers in which you try to measure yourself. And I think, you know, for this team, and, you know, I thought about this when they won, you know, locked up the NFC East. I mean, they have a capability, and one of the things we always talk about is the state of the NFL. You look around the league, and yes, you have your teams that are playing well, but it's a long damn season.
Sure.
And the postseason play is a different set of circumstances. It's a lot more energy, and a lot of crazy things can happen. And you just hope going in there that you feel really good about yourself and you carry this momentum. And, you know, the irony and all the similarities, yes, that's great, but you really want to just go beyond that, because you don't want to be like those other teams in the past that have went, you know, that went one and done. Sure. You want to extend yourself and make a legacy for your team now.
You know, I'm interested. Obviously, when you guys were having the successes you were, I mean, the Cowboys were the standard, but they didn't have as rich of a history as they do now, because you guys were carving that history. But at the time, you know, when you're playing, are you aware? Obviously, you're aware, but I mean, how much did history loom over you? You know, the first Super Bowl, how much was it, man, they haven't won one since 1977? Or, you know, people at the time, you know, Troy and Roger. I mean, how much, you know, because you play for the Cowboys. I mean, you're playing for a rich organization, and you guys made it all the more rich. But, you know, I guess the question is just how much were you aware of that? I mean, of what came before you, I guess.
Well, there had to be something that came before us, because of the brand and the star. And without the trophies, without – you know, the legacy of all these players that played for the Dallas Cowboys, there wouldn't be this brand. And I think, you know, Jerry has done a tremendous job extending the brand without them, the Cowboys of today, going and winning an NFC championship or going to the Super Bowl. But I think there's a rich history about that. Now, these kids are so young now. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, some of them weren't alive when I played in the Super Bowl, or some of the great players that have gone through, the guys in the Ring of Honor, you know, the Troy Aikmans, but they understand that. They're very cognizant of that, and I think sensitive to that, because had that not been for the players before them, you know, that star is not as big as it is. It's not the label America's team. You're not either loved or hated throughout the country. So I think that, yeah, I think while guys, they may come across as, you know, who's that guy? I mean, I didn't even heard of him. I think they understand it to a certain degree, because everyone goes through the same, you know, type of revolving door, if you will, the revolving door of excellence and setting the bar for yourself. And I think that's very important, especially when it comes around playoff time. You know, guys coming back and them seeing, you know, the Troy Aikmans and the Michael Irvins and our great, you know, I'll go back to 1992 when we had the number one defense in the National Football League, and we went on to win the Super Bowl. I mean, there's a lot of similarities that you can kind of label yourself and think, you know what? Look how great those guys were on defense. Maybe we got overshadowed because we had such a great offense, and that's a glamorous position. But we realize without a defense, you know, I know this, but without a defense, they can't move on and expect to win big games.
I mean, I think Cowboys fans love hearing stuff like that. I mean, it's like a fraternity. I mean, you know.
It doesn't change. I don't think – you can't reinvent the wheel.
No.
I mean, we have social media. We have Instagram. We have so much instant electronic media. But that's one thing you can't – and you can't reinvent the wheel when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm. I do believe – I mean, you know, you've played for various teams. I've got to believe it means more – When you play for some, a team like the Cowboys. I mean, you guys, and
Without a doubt.
I'm specifically talking about you guys. I mean, you and, Brady James, they got all these veterans. I mean, you guys walk around AT&T Stadium, you guys got suit jackets. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to brag for you, you know what I mean?
You like the Usher jackets?
Yeah, I mean, there's a patch. I mean,
the NFL alumni jacket.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a nice touch.
It's a fraternity. I mean, that doesn't happen everywhere, you know? And so
you're exactly right, RJ. And I think that's the thing that I love doing, one thing I love doing this show with you is that you kind of understand it. You know, although our ages are different, I think we understand the whole process. And I think you got to look at it that way because, that's the football life. That's what you look through. You look through those football life glasses and some guys are more individual, but I have the sense that this team is different. I think it's more, they're not a selfish bunch.
Right.
They seem to me, and that's another similarity that I'll mention with this team, is that there's a bunch of team guys, and it's not just one guy that's moving this train. It's all the moving parts is hopefully moving this thing to something special.
I think that when you're a kid or you're growing up and you root for a team, you want to believe that the players love the team as much as you do. And that's that's true sometimes, but it's also not. I mean, some guys, it's just a job. I mean, whatever. And I think sort of the antithesis of, or I should say the sort of prime example, excuse me, of what you're talking about is Jalen Smith. He's the guy I think of. I mean, something that I thought was so huge was that he wore the Randy White jersey warming up for Thanksgiving. He talks all the time about Cowboys history. He talks about that number 54, how it means a lot to him, how he's been given it. He has to live up to the standard and the legacy that number has in that organization. I mean, I think those thoughts become more clear this time of year, when you're going to the playoffs, when you're knocking on the door, when you're close to touching what everybody else that's come before you has touched, I have to imagine it's on your mind.
That's the greatest thing. And I don't know, I don't care what the grade of the film is, whether it's black and white, whether it's 35 millimeter, whether it's high definition, the things don't change. And I think when you really get down to the core of it, we're really just real, real football players that understand it. It doesn't really matter then. And they admire. There's an admiration for you. Look, go into that building. You look around. You see the Ring of Honor. You see someone like the Manster, which to me was one of the greatest all-time defensive linemen that's ever played. And just watch the passion and those teams. And I think the thing that really just transcends to a lot of for different generation mm-hmm. is the Cowboys.
Sure.
Is a star. Because a lot of kids grow up saying, they may not even know who plays on that team. But there's something about that star, and so it kind of gravitates them to be, I would say, a little bit more, more partial. I mean, how many times you hear guys talk about, well, I grew up as a Cowboy fan, but I play for the 49ers
right.
or the Green Bay Packers. So I think that's really kind of the special fraternity and bonding that these younger guys have because guys come around and they incorporate that, and it's important because you look up in that stadium, you see three, the three banners or the banners that have been won and the three that were won in the 90s are more contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you really want to try to do something about it.
So I think history is pertinent. Before we get into looking at the current team and the current playoff picture, I really wanted to get your take on this. I wrote about this on Thursday. And the world exploded. It was quite the scene over at bloggingtheboys.com. Your boy, Darren Woodson, whose name does hang up in AT&T Stadium, member of the Dallas Cowboys Ring of Honor, should be Hall of Famer. I think we probably both agree there. And Woody, last week before Christmas, was on the Ryan Russillo show. And he talked about a player who will probably join him in the Ring of Honor, in Tony Romo. And Dak Prescott. I don't know if Dak will end up in the Ring of Honor. We'll see. But Woody came out and he was talking about, whether Jerry Jones should pay Dak. And he was talking about how much, and you've emphasized this a lot, Jerry cares for guys, mm-hmm. etc. And he said, there are some warts you see with Dak. I wish he could play four quarters of just error-free football. You're not going to get that with Dak Prescott. You're not. But what you are going to get is a leader of men. You're going to get a guy who this team firmly believes in. Every player on that football team, I don't care if they're playing the Colts and they're down by 23, when he's on the sideline, they believe in him. Now, I think you and I both agree with this. There's nothing hot takey about this. Not to accuse Woody of a hot take, but the next part, Tony, is where people got a little ruffled. Woody goes on to say, "I can't say the same thing about Tony Romo when he was here a few years ago. I can't say that this team and these players thought, okay, well, Romo's going to bail us out. Okay, well, we're down by 14. Romo's going to do this. Or we're up by 14 and Romo's not going to turn the ball over." No, no, no. They didn't believe. Yeah, people are pretty pissed off. Tony, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of respect for Woody. I think unlike a lot of other guys that are in the broadcasting, he's very opinionated, and I respect his opinion. But
totally,
I can't disagree more with him on this particular topic and what he said. And let me tell you, and let me explain it. This is why, because I remember a guy in number 8 that played for our team, Troy Aikman. And I think a lot of people would run through a wall for that dude. I mean, he was that polarizing. He was just a tremendous leader. But the thing that he doesn't have, that Dak doesn't have yet, was the ability to win big games like Troy Aikman. So that's a difference. So there's some parallels. I understand that. He's a leader. You be a leader and they will follow.
Sure.
I believe that notion. I believe that wholeheartedly. Because I've seen it, I felt it. I played on different teams, and you just didn't fall for those type of quarterbacks that you just didn't sense that had that leadership aura about them. And to say this about Romo, I can't disagree with him any more than I just know that it's not accurate. You're saying that. Dak Prescott now in his infancy career, these players are going to follow him more than they would Tony Romo. And so I think there's a two-part story to this. But I respect his opinion. Mm-hmm. But the only reason why I would think that he would say something like that so he could get some attention where people would talk about it. So there'd be this dissension, comparison between Romo and Dak. And
right.
Again, how Romo, you couldn't trust him because, he'd do something to the game. But it's totally false.
I think, first of all, and I know you're not doing this, but a lot of people took this as Woody saying that Dak was better than Romo. That wasn't what he said. I mean, he's talking about just the perceptions, and I don't know. I mean, that's hard to measure. It's hard to qualify unless you've been there. I think somebody, probably the only person who would be, qualified to say something like that might be Jason Witten, somebody who experienced both lockers, maybe Dez, maybe Terrence Williams, guys that really kind of experienced both. If you're simply measuring how much players believe in a guy, that's a different thing than how good they are. You know what I mean? And so, maybe this is true. I don't know. But maybe it's true because, and I'm speculating, maybe the locker room is just different. You got different guys. Maybe they're more, I don't want to call them impressionable, but maybe they just like Dak. They're cooler with Dak. You know what I mean? I don't know. Leadership is a funny thing. This was just really weird for him to come out. I mean, because it's one thing for him to say that players believe in Dak more than they ever believed in Romo. But then he goes a step further and says that they didn't believe in Romo, which is kind of, I mean.
He definitely doubled down on what he was saying.
Yeah.
And I don't want this to sound wrong, but I think you have to be really careful what you say. Because I could understand maybe him saying something if it was him comparing Troy Aikman to Tony Romo. Who would you rather have? I mean, I'd rather have Troy Aikman. Think about what he has done in his career compared to maybe what Romo didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But to say something like that, that guys wouldn't buy into Romo. First of all, if you were to do it right now and the Cowboys, and that's the thing, I just can't believe he said this, because think about the Cowboys. If they're 14 points down, are the Cowboys going to have a better chance today if they have either Romo or Dak Prescott as your quarterback?
I mean, yeah, it's a weird point. I mean, but again, I'm not saying I agree or disagree.
Is the defense going to play harder because, Dak Prescott's your quarterback? Or, is Dak going to be able to bring you behind? I mean, okay, well, the defense is going to ball anyway.
Do you think, you and Troy are similar in age, right? I mean, maybe it's just, I don't know. I've never been in an NFL locker. Maybe, I, I if if a teammate is closer to my age, for example, just using age as one data point here, you know, we're closer, we're more friendly, you know. I mean,
See, I don't that should ever come into play. It doesn't really matter. I mean, look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady's 41 years old.
sure.
He's got guys in there that could, they probably call him Uncle Tom, right? Uncle Tom Brady, okay? Because, I mean, but you know what I mean. It's just that he's a proven player.
I guess
And guy and I know what I understand. I mean, maybe they understand it.
maybe they're better friends with Dak. That's kind of where I'm going. I mean, is that
Well,
possible?
maybe he's a better maybe he's and maybe he and thing he didn't really explain is that maybe in the locker room, maybe he's a lot closer to players, maybe he's more personable. Maybe after when he leaves the building, maybe he's more personable and does things with, you know, outside of the, you know, the locker room, and they do things, you know, have a Friday night where they all get together. I understand that, but the way it was worded and the way it was interpreted is it was totally different than what may my he may mean. And I think that that's you know, it's a different perspective.
I just, that was kind of how I took it. I mean, in a weird way, Woody was speaking on behalf of multiple locker rooms. Again, not that they think that Romo is better or Dak is better, but just that they believe in one. You know, it's kind of like,
Okay, well, he maybe he should have said that. But to me, when I read your blog and read what he said, it didn't say from like other, you know, other sources in the locker room.
sure.
I interpreted it as his own personal opinion
Yeah, I
that he
mean,
had been in the locker room, and I don't think that's fair because he just for him, he's taken an analytical an observation of what's going on, and I just don't. As I said before, how can you even compare Dak Prescott to Tony Romo,
it's a,
especially this part of his career? I mean, Romo, yes, he made mistakes, but look at his proven record. Until Dak Prescott wins a playoff game, until he gets into deeper in the playoffs, and he has to come from behind. And granted, you look at his record. I mean, it's pretty good. But I think right now, maybe let's kind of let's address this maybe 2 to 3 years when there's a little bit more on his resume, Dak's resume.
it's interesting. I mean, it's impossible to compare them. I guess the way I understood it, to kind of explain it, not to you but to the people listening, is so when I was a little kid, I used to enjoy my hamburgers plain and dry. Didn't like any veggies or anything like that. No cheese, no nothing. Just meat and buns, right? And that was just the way I preferred it. That was what I liked. You know, I'm willing to admit now that that was obviously incorrect. You know, because there are a lot of delicious vegetables in the world, you know what I mean? But I believed that, you know what I mean? Like, if you believe it, then you like it, you know what I'm saying? Like, that was kind of, I know that's a weird analogy, but like, that was kind of how I took this, was that, you know, the players believe more, whether that's correct or incorrect place or correctly placed belief is a different subject, but the belief might be stronger, even though it might not necessarily make as much sense. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, it does, but I think the team is a lot different than it was 3 years ago when
Exactly.
Romo was in his, you know, the downward part of his career was nothing. You can't even really compare it, and I think it's just so circumstantial where you have to look at the and you compare it. It's almost like comparing apples and oranges, but you have to look at the both sides of what these two guys did well. And again, I just don't. And look. Woody was a very passionate leader. I mean, he's one of the most respectable leaders that you'll have in the locker room. I mean, I respected him in the huddle, but again, it's just hard for him, his perspective, to really just compare and say that guys are playing harder for Dak than they did for Tony Romo. And, you know, to me, what he said about, you know, down by 14 points, I mean, if you're down by 14 points, yeah, you got to create some opportunities, but you know, when your quarterback's got the ball, he's the one that ultimately is going to be the reason why you end up winning the game.
It's a weird thing to say. And I don't even want to call it a take, you know, because it's just a weird thing to say. And
It's
he
so random. I think it's just one of these randoms. And again, I mentioned this earlier when we started talking about this. I have a lot of respect because he is a guy that will go out and give an opinion. And there's a lot of guys that won't do that.
I guess to tie a bow on it, what it felt a lot like was back, I mean, it was a long time ago now, back during the Tim Tebow days when he was quarterback in the Broncos, just, you know, people would talk about how he just, and that's what Woody said, he had this it factor, you know, he had this thing, you know, and I'm sure that that exists to a degree. I don't know, I've never been there, you know, but, and maybe it is hard to measure, maybe it's impossible to measure. I do think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that there are guys that are just natural, whatever you want to call it, leaders, you know.
Natural born leaders.
I mean, I do think that Dak has that. Maybe he is, maybe I don't want to say Woody was wrong, maybe the right way to say this is Dak is a more natural leader than Romo, because some leadership's, you know, constructed, you know, built over time. Maybe Dak is just a more natural leader in that sense.
Well, I agree with that perception. And that perspective, I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think you can make your own personal assessment, and you can talk to people. And I'm sure I've talked, people have said that before, and I understand that. But again, I think this is, we can all agree this is the infancy part of Dak Prescott's career. And look, I think he's a tremendous player. And I think when I say tremendous player, I think it's a whole gamut of his characteristics as a quarterback. Because again, when things are tough, I mean, he's resilient. He'll come back. I mean, he's the first one to admit, hey, I made that was a bad play. That's on me. But he finds a way to come back and create an opportunity. And he, you know, to his bad throw or interception, he may come back and, you know, and rebound with two or three really good throws.
This is a really just, you know, obviously had nothing to do with, you know, things happening on the field, et cetera. Like I said, that was part of the reason it was so random, you know, but, you know, it was an interesting topic to kick around Christmas time and stuff, especially while the Cowboys don't have a game of significance. So, you know, just thanks to Woody for inspiring some great discussion amongst friends. I'll ask you this before we exit this this part of the conversation. Who on y'all's teams was a natural leader that we're not aware of, obviously? I mean, we know Troy was a leader. We know Woody, as you mentioned. I mean, who just, in the way we're talking, had that ability that was just God-given to lead?
Well, I think a lot of guys, they, you know, they lead by, you know, you hear this all the time about there's, you know, the rah-rah guys. I mean, that's kind of transparent. You either have the natural ability and what you see with your actions on the field, I think people respect that more. But, you know, offensively, I always thought Michael Irvin was a very passionate leader. I mean, he was a guy that just was really the energy when we needed it, and then he would make a play to, you know, really validate him yelling and getting people inspired in the game and getting the emotional part of it, you know, uplifting us. And I always thought that he was tremendous. You know, Eric Williams was a tremendous leader, an offensive guy that was very passionate, because I think everybody interprets it as a player. You always look at guys, what they do, things that you may not even see. When you go watch film the next day, you say, man, that guy's busting his ass. He's making plays. He's all over the place. And no one ever talks about it. Mm-hmm. And that's probably more for the offensive players, offensive linemen. I on the defensive side, you know, as I mentioned, you know, Darren Woodson was a tremendous leader. You know, Charles Haley, I mean, as much as sometimes we didn't like being around him, but we loved him unconditionally, he's a tremendous leader in how he played.
Sure.
And but I think on that team, it was collectively. And that's what I mentioned earlier. That I alluded to about the characteristics in a lot of teams is that there's a lot of unselfishness, a lot of guys that really just kind of led by example. But whenever you needed one guy, I think Troy was the very kind of polarizing person. And I mentioned this before, I think, on our show, is that he was stoic in a way in which you approached him and you just knew that his all business. And like, okay, he's got his mind, he's got his game face on. You know, you just go out and do what you got to do, big fella, and we respect that.
Interesting. A very interesting, you know, thing to talk about, because it's kind of all opinion, you know what I mean? And so it's hard to prove, and that's why it sparks such a big debate over at BTB. So, you know, very, very
interesting. That's a great piece, by the way.
Hey, you know, I mean,
nice job,
all I did was just write up what Woody said. That's all. You know, I'm just a guy.
There you go. That's all you need. Just get it. So, you just need a good topic.
Hopefully next time Darren Woodson's a subject on this show, it's in a few months when he's going in the Hall of Fame. Fingers crossed. But so let's talk about the playoffs, because no disrespect to the Giants, they don't matter. I mean, you know, before we get to the playoffs, if you're playing, you know, because all week long, Tony. It's every guy, Dak and Zeke and DeMarcus Lawrence. Everyone's coming out. We want to win this game. We want to win. Put me in that situation with you. Be real. Do you care if you win this game, if you're playing?
It doesn't. You know, look, I don't think – I think – And we did this. I think we talked about this on our Instagram live. But do you know what? As a football player, I think you really want to create some momentum. Now, you know, we threw this around. We're talking about, you know, how much did Dak Prescott play? Well, I think Dak needs to continue to stay in rhythm. But you know, you just don't want to jeopardize him getting hurt.
Right.
You know, but for us, it really didn't matter because you still need to get some reps. You still got to. You're still playing the New York Giants and. Again, you know, 9-6 is great, and you're the NFC champions. But you know, there's something about that 10-6 that sounds better than the 9-7. And maybe that's just me. But yeah, there's nothing to play for. I mean, they've already did about as well as they're going to do. Mm-hmm. They're the four-seeded team in the NFC. They're either going to play Seattle or Minnesota. So there's not really any reason why that. You know, what's the motivation of going out there and risk, you know, getting someone hurt?
Right.
So I think that I'm more of the adage that let's get some reps. Let's get some guys a couple of series. Let's see how this thing – let's see what the Giants do. Let's see if the Giants try to win the game.
Well, that was my next question.
They may have a different motivation and agenda to in this last game because considering the Cowboys have nothing to play for. So I'm sure, especially on the Giants team, because I think that team is going to – it's going to blow up pretty soon, or it has blown up. There's a lot of evaluation that needs to be done with that team.
When you look at a game like this, and thankfully you were not in the situation the Giants are in, you know, like they are at a large frequency, do you think as someone who's been there, are the Giants players half-assing it too? I mean, you know, are they just kind of ready to check out? I mean, or are they – because I think a lot of fans, you know, think, oh, they're going to try to hurt the Cowboys. You know, they're going to try to ruin their playoff chances. I mean, what's that like from someone who's been there?
Well, I don't know Eli Manning. I don't know what his situation is going to be. But, I mean, what do they really have to gain? Even the Giants, what do they have to gain from this – this game they're playing?
They can lose draft position. That's what they
So maybe they could do that. Exactly. So, I mean, there's some strategy going in. I mean, are they going to draft a quarterback? I mean, what are they – you know, what is their whole philosophy going into this? And I think it goes down to this. I think there's guys that are playing for jobs. I mean, that's what the coaches said. You know, at this point, hey, no one's safe.
Right.
So do they go in and they play with that philosophy, the players that finally get an opportunity to, you know, to play in the game? And let me tell you this. This is something behind the curtain. There's a lot of guys – that have incentives in their contract.
I was about to say, so we got playing some bonuses.
Time. And let me tell you from experience, that bean counter is counting plays. So you may see a little bit of that jockeying. I don't know. But there's incentive and for playing time and everything else like that. But, I mean, there's a lot of things that go the thought process going to this. What do they need to do? But I'm sure they're hearing this all this week. It's like, look, the Cowboys are going to come in here. You know, they've already clinched. They won the NFC East. So, you know, we're playing for jobs. We've had a bad year. Let's go out there and keep some dignity, whoever's playing. And, you know, maybe that's something that's how they'll approach this game.
Okay, so regardless of what happens, like you said, Cowboys are the 4 seed, NFC East champs. The only goal is, you know, unless you got some money on the line, is come out of this injury-free. You think they're
without a doubt.
You think their wives are at home saying, "Hey, you better get those 20 plays." I mean, you know, we're going. I want to go to Cabo in the summer.
Well, let me tell you this. you're talking to someone. Your boy, your co-host on the 750 on Blogging the Boys. I was part of that whole them counting plays when I was with the Cowboys, and let me just tell you, it got down my last year in the league, my 12th year, I was only supposed to play 25 plays, but Leon Ladd ended up getting suspended. So I ended up having to assume the role as a starter. Mm-hmm. So I had different clauses in my contract for playing time. I think it was 40%, and then 50%. Well, hell, I ended up playing over probably 35 plays a game. Well, that's almost 50% of the game, mm-hmm. the plays. And it got to the last game of the season, and let me tell you, there was a guy, his name was Craig Benson, not Craig Benson, but he was this They were trying to develop him, but their excuse was that we need to give the big fellow more playing time. But, you know, it's your last season because I was going to retire after that. This is my 12th year, and I didn't know if I was going to continue playing my 13th season. So we're going to start you. So they started me. I went out on the field. I played two snaps, and that was in. Rest of the game. Guess how many plays I come up short for getting that 50% playing time?
Two plays. Oh, God. Oh.
And a ton of money. So you're talking about someone pissed off after the game. And my wife, she knew. I you know, right after the game, I got in the car, put my clothes on, and I said, let's go. And I told her, and I explained it to her, and it's like, you know what? I cannot believe that. You know, even back then when I was playing, you know, the salaries, everything's relevant to the time and era of the NFL. And it was a ton of money, and we're getting paid, you know, a lot of money back then. But still, it was just two plays.
Yeah, nobody wants less money. I mean, everybody wants more. So I mean,
and it was about another $250,000, and I was so pissed.
Oh, dude.
So yeah,
I'm pissed now.
They are counting plays, believe it or not. But you know, now the guys make so much money. But still, I mean, there's incentives for both sides, the Giants and the Cowboys, for playing time. So hope that doesn't happen.
So did you go into it knowing the exact number, or you just knew you were close?
I just assumed that I really didn't think about it. I mean, it felt like I was playing 50% of the time. I mean, I was my 12th year in the league, and again, I was expecting to just come back and, you know, wrap it up my last year, 2 years in the league, and finish up with the Cowboys. So I thought that, you know, I'm just going to 25 plays. Hey, I can handle that. So again, under some really unforeseen circumstances, I ended up having to be a starter for the whole year, and I actually had a pretty good year, but I wasn't expecting. Let me just tell you this. I wasn't being paid a starter salary in 1997.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a really fascinating wrinkle. I mean, I'm pissed off. Don't get me wrong.
The truth. That is a true story, and that doesn't. That is reality.
I wonder, you know, I mean, I'm sure this has happened somewhere at some point in NFL history. Some guy is sitting there, let's call it a defensive lineman, and he knows he's two plays shy, whatever. And, you know, his offense has the ball, you know, and there's 3 minutes left. He's thinking, you better score right now. You know, you need to score because I got to get in. I'll go in on the kickoff.
Tackles.
Yeah, get in. Yeah, score right now because I got to get in the game.
Exactly.
Man, that's crazy. So this will be a hectic week.
We need to see the guy that has the guy in the practice squad. We haven't seen him all year.
That's right.
Oh, by the way, I got two plays to get that $500,000 bonus. Well, you're not going to get it today, big boy.
Wow.
Think about this. If that happened to you, think about how upset you would be after the game.
I would be pissed. Two plays. Oh, wow. I would see like that.
That would be like 49.5% or something like that. 49.99%.
It hurts, Tony. It hurts
for
me.
But, you know, that's the stuff you get on the 750.
That's exactly. I mean, you know, that's what you come here for. That's why you
stay. I could have paid for my kids' college.
Hey, I mean, you know, if you had gotten that, I'm not trying to tell you what to do with your money, but our podcast studio could have been a lot nicer. You know what I mean? I'm just saying.
I do remember this. I remember I called Jerry Jones, and my defensive line coach, his name was Craig Bowler at the time, and he knew what was going on. And so I was so mad. I called Jerry, and I said, you know what? That's wrong. You know, the owners are business people. I mean, that's how they make money. And he goes, hey, Tony, I'll make it up to you in the future. And I feel like going up to him, and, you know, 20-something years later, and say, hey, man, think you can make up that $250,000?
Hey, Jerry, you know, we want to do something. We want to repaint the house. So, you know, wow, that's interesting.
You know what? That's the business of playing in the NFL or any sport. I mean, people understand that, you know, it's a ruthless, cutthroat business. You know, that's how these owners make money. And just when you think they're not watching, they're counting.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know if there's a spreadsheet on somebody's desk this week that says, you know, hey,
I think
you know,
I'll tell you how many players. That's one thing. I mean, I know the salaries have gotten a lot larger, but I guarantee if the incentive packages for plays and everything else, it, all the language is in the contract. And believe me, they the counting department understands and keeps close eye on that.
Interesting. Okay, so regardless of what happens, whoever gets paid, hopefully everybody does. Hopefully it's just raining money. The Cowboys are the four seed in the NFC. There are two possibilities as far as who they could play. If the Seattle Seahawks defeat the Arizona Cardinals at home on Sunday, an overwhelming likelihood, then it's them. That's who the Cowboys draw, the Seahawks. If the Seahawks lose and the Minnesota Vikings win against the Chicago Bears, and the Bears themselves could be playing for a bye, we don't know, whatever, right. There's a lot going on, then the Cowboys get the Vikings.
That game.
Exactly. However, the Philadelphia Eagles could sneak in as the sixth seed in the NFC, but the only way the Cowboys could play the Eagles in the playoffs, for the people that are concerned, would be if the Eagles got in, which would require a win on their part and a loss from the Vikings. So if the Eagles got in, and then both the Cowboys and the Eagles made it all the way to the NFC Championship game, then the Cowboys would host the Eagles in the title game. That seems pretty improbable. It does seem, Tony, there's actually an 86% chance that the Seattle Seahawks are who the Cowboys play. I think I speak for both of us when I say I'd rather play the Vikings, but I'm not terrified of the Seahawks.
Well, I mean, probably I would have said that 8 weeks ago, but you know, now that you look at their stats in the National Football League, they are number one in rushing. They're rushing almost 159 yards per game. Mm-hmm. They get Stephen Baldwin back, which didn't, that dude, you know, he wasn't healthy.
Doug Baldwin. Stephen Baldwin's
Doug
the
Baldwin.
Actor.
I'm sorry.
You've been watching Baldwin. Too many movies over the break.
Yeah. Alec Baldwin, but Doug Baldwin, he's been tremendous, and I think it comes down to quarterback, and their defense is playing well, so they're a different team now, and I think that's the scary part about some of these teams is that the transition that they make as they get longer into the season, and I think when you look at the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson and, you know, Doug Baldwin and the fact that they're really good against, you know, they can run the football. I mean, their defense is playing good. I think that I'd rather, you know, you'd rather play the Minnesota Vikings mm-hmm. because, you know, the Vikings haven't played well. I mean, they got Kirk Cousins to go in there to create this huge offense. And, you know, the first half of the season, yeah, he was kind of on par, but he's gotten worse as the season's gone on. So I think Seattle would be a tremendous matchup for the Cowboys.
It would be fun and enticing and scary and overwhelming and terrifying, but fun. It would still be fun. You know, it was last year that the Cowboys and Seahawks played in what was effectively a playoff game on Christmas Eve. It was week 16. They both needed a win to keep their playoff hopes alive. The Cowboys lost. They didn't even score a touchdown. And a year later, Chris Richard is on the right side of this game. So we both would rather face the Vikings, but again, I think we both think the Seahawks would be a good draw. Assuming it's the Seahawks, then the Cowboys, in all likelihood, assuming a Bears win in the wild card round as well, would have to play the Seahawks and then the Saints and then the winner of Rams-Bears game. So I guess my question is, how likely do you think that is? I mean, how probable would you say that is? How far can this team go? I for what it's worth, I think they can win a playoff game. I think they can definitely beat the Seahawks. They can certainly beat the Vikings. I think it's hard to say that it's impossible that they could beat the Saints because they already did. It's just, I think it's very difficult to see them winning three games like that in a row. But to be fair, they did win five games in a row that we thought were impossible not too long ago.
Well, let's put it this way. I'll give them a 58% chance that they can beat the Seattle Seahawks at home. I'll give them probably a higher. No, I'm going to go lower on that. I'm going to go about 51%.
Because I said the dome. I mean, the Superdome is going to be a hard place to play.
Well, no, I'm talking about their route getting there.
Okay, got you.
I'm going by chronology. I'm going the first game that, you know, Seattle, I mean,
so you're
saying playing
51,
at home,
barely favorites.
Well, I'm going to go 58%.
Okay.
No, I'm going to go 58% if they play the Vikings and 51% if they play the Seattle Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are just playing. They're a hot team right now. But going through it, you know, like if they play New Orleans and move on to that, they've already shown what they can do at home. They shut them down 13. It was 13-10. And I think they're – defenses can continue to have to play better. But I just kind of seen some cracks in the football armor just a little bit with what we saw against Tampa Bay, and the offense is just they are who they are. You know, Amari Cooper, thank God you have Amari Cooper. So I don't know. I think it's a lot harder to win on the road, obviously. But I think they can beat the Saints because they have. But I think, again, we'll go back to what we talked about early on the 7-5 hole about your boy Darren Woodson. He seems to think Dak Prescott, this team is going to play for Dak Prescott. So if they do that, then I think they can maybe make it to the NFC Championship. But that's going to be the biggest hurdle, is getting whichever team they play in their first game. And I think Seattle is going to be a tremendous matchup. And as you said, it's going to be fun to watch. But I think they can beat New Orleans on the road. But again, the elevation, and it goes up through the roof. I mean, it elevates to a different level in the playoffs. And I think New Orleans is probably more adapted to that because of Drew Brees and what they've done, and Sean Payton. So I think it's going to be difficult. I got them winning the first game at home.
Let's say that the three opponents are the Seahawks, because that is very likely, and then it would be the Saints, again, assuming the Bears lost in the first round. So let's say that the road to Atlanta was Seattle, New Orleans, and let's call it the Rams, because the Rams probably going to win, although the Bears did beat the Rams. But let's just call it the Rams for fun.
See, I'm not sold on the Rams. So then I think if the Cowboys could beat Seattle and go to New Orleans and beat the Saints on the road, I think they got a good chance of getting there, because I think they match up pretty good against the Rams. And the way the Rams have been playing here lately, I just don't believe in them. I think they peaked out too soon.
So what's the hardest potential game for the Cowboys? Let's look at it that way. Let's throw Chicago in the mix, because if Chicago beats the Rams, then you got to go to Soldier Field. And you got to consider the weather there. I mean, because the weather in LA is going to be pretty nice. I mean, you know what I mean? Hey, there's California life. So you've got Seattle. Hollywood. You've got Seattle at home, New Orleans in the dome, LA in Hollywood, or Chicago at Soldier Field in deep January. So of those four potential games, which one is the most difficult?
I'm going to go –
the Cowboys, I hate to go cold weather thing, but when I think of these Cowboys in the cold weather, I think back to Dak and Zeke's rookie year in New York when it was like 13 degrees, the game they left Lucky Whitehead behind, like Kevin McAllister in Home Alone.
I forgot about that.
And so they were awful in that game. Granted, it was their second loss of the season, but so we haven't seen them play well in the very, very small sample size that they have played in cold games. So just, you know, to consider when it comes to Chicago. So which one's the most difficult?
I think, as I mentioned, I think Seattle, that's – well, we'll go beyond that. I think they can win at home. I think it's the most realistic game they can win is at home, either Seattle or Minnesota. New Orleans on the road, I think they can win, because I think that game's going to be harder to win. If they win that game and they get past where they go play their Chicago, I think it's Chicago, the fact they got a rookie quarterback, I think that helps a team playing that's had experience on the road, but it is the elements. You don't know what it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. But the Rams, you know, to me, I'm just not sold on them. I think, you know, Jared Goff has struggled. I mean, defensively, they got one of the best players in the National Football League on defense, and Aaron Donald. But I think there's been a little doubt seeping in on that team.
So then hardest game would be the Saints.
I think the Saints. I think when you look at the road to get through the Super Bowl, it's definitely through New Orleans.
Well, so I'm curious then, I mean, just to see what happens. We'll find out who the final NFC playoff team is, because we know
– they got to get to that point first.
Agreed. But we both think that the most winnable game is the wild card round at home. So, I mean, right. And we both think that there's at least
– because it is at home. I will give that – to me, that's at least I'm gonna say 2 points or
Right.
1 point.
There's a greater than 50% chance that they win in the wild card round. So I think we'll find out on Sunday who the final NFC wild card team is. We know Seattle's the first one. Will it be Minnesota, which is the overwhelming likelihood, or will it be Philadelphia? And then I think it's interesting because you only, if you're the Cowboys, have to go to New Orleans if you win and if the Bears win. But what if, hey, I mean, hey, we're talking about wild things here today. What if you win against the Seahawks, and what if the Vikings beat the Bears? I mean, it's but because
It can
then
happen. I
because
mean, without a doubt. I mean,
yeah, then you got to go to the Rams, obviously, to take them on in the divisional round, and we both think that they're certainly beatable. And then I think the Saints probably squash the Vikings, and so you got to go to New Orleans for the NFC Championship game. But at least you get somebody else trying to knock the Saints off first.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, that's a good way to look at it. But the thing about it, just what you really love is having home field advantage to the playoffs. And New Orleans to me, they're great. I mean, they're a great football team, and they're a lot better at home. I mean, we saw what happened, what the Cowboys did to them, excuse me, at home. And I think there's a certain, as I said, the elevation of energy, everything that is elevated. It goes to the roof. And I think for me, that's the thing that the question is, can the Cowboys, if they get to that point where they play New Orleans at home, are they going to be able to duplicate that performance they had when they beat them at AT&T Stadium? That is going to be the storyline in that game.
For sure. Final thought, I think, before we get out of here for this episode of the 750, the Cowboys made Sean Lee a healthy scratch on Sunday against the Buccaneers, and they won, which is kind of crazy to consider, but it happened. Obviously, the Cowboys have Leighton Vander Esch, and they have Jalen Smith. The state of their linebacking core looks pretty solid down the line. And part of the reason I think they rested Sean against the Bucs, I don't think they would ever admit this, but was they probably were thinking, look, we can beat the Bucs without Sean Lee. Let's get Sean healthy for the playoffs. I mean, I think that that's more likely than that they said, we just don't need him. But the point remains that he is kind of expendable. And so do you think that whenever the playoffs do end for the Cowboys, that it will be the last time Sean Lee wears a Cowboys uniform?
I don't know. And you may want to look at his contract to see the incentives he has in it for playing time. Granted, he can't stay healthy, but I think everyone. The thing about for any sport you play in, father time and injuries is undefeated. I mean, look at his career. I mean, he has been marked by tons of energies, tremendous player, but he just can't stay healthy on the field and stay on the field. And I think. When you, it's got to, and I saw him on the sideline, and I just know watching Leighton Vander Esch, I mean, he won the Bob Lilly Award. I mean, just the tremendous respect that people have for him, that it's got to hurt. I mean, I know we've all seen it. When you see a younger guy and someone, and Sean Lee's not that old, but he's old because of the wear and tear on his body. His age is obviously sped up even further. And I don't know. I think obviously he's going to take a cut in pay. He's not going to be able to come back. And I think he understands that. And I think it'd probably be smart for Sean Lee to look deep and long and hard and just ask himself. Because I think for him, if he seems to me he's probably going to go right into coaching. It seems to me he just has the aptitude and just seems like, just the knowledge and the communication and everything he has. I think it'd be suited for coaching. But I would be very hard for me to sit here and tell you and our listeners that Sean Lee's going to come back because of just the fact that, injuries has caught up with him.
The deck is the most stacked against that idea, I think, than it's ever been, especially because of the emergence of Leighton Vander Esch. But we'll see. And you mentioned he won the Bob Lilly Award. He was awarded that before the game against the Bucks. After the game, he talked so much about how much he loves being a Cowboy. He loves living in Dallas. He loves the fans. He's so grateful. That dude is one in a million, it seems. So good for the Cowboys on pulling the trigger way back, during the draft. That was fun. That's
Yeah, I
not
mean,
easy.
a lot of respect for him, and I think people, again, it's just one of those, You know, the thing about it is the worst thing that happens is when you're not on the field and you see the development of a young player that's going to be hopefully around for a long time develop in front of your eyes. And that's the hardest thing to just, you know, the reality, the football reality to sink in, because it just, it happens. And I don't think anyone expected Leighton Vander Esch to be the player he is this early on. That's the worst thing about it for a player that's injured, that it'd be a lot. You know, we, that's all we talked about last year is when Sean Lee was on the field, how bad this defense was. Well, we've seen how great he is now this year without him on the field.
Mm-hmm. Two final things before we get out of here, Tony. First of all, it doesn't matter, but we do this every week, so might as well. Game prediction. Who wins on Sunday? It's a weird game to predict. I realize that because so many guys are going to come out, et cetera.
Well, I think the Giants, they have something to play for. I'm going to go for that. You know, you hear the everyone's playing for their jobs and no one's safe. So I like the Giants to win this game. Score-wise, I think it's going to be 28-17.
Okay.
The Giants win this one.
I don't know. I feel it. Cowboys win 2013. Just feels that way. You know. Last thing, I saved the most important thing for last. You and I, we will be back on Monday on New Year's Eve for a wrap-up edition of the regular season on the 750. Get ready for the playoffs because we'll know who and when the Cowboys are playing. But also something that will take place before the next time we speak here with everyone on the 750 is the college football playoff, Tony.
I was hoping we could
shoehorn
that in.
First of all, you know, let's talk about the low key game. Clemson, Notre Dame. Who wins?
I got Clemson.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I love when historic programs get in and, you know, make some noise. That's why I've been on the Michigan train for a while, so I'm so disappointed there. So I'm happy that Notre Dame's in. It's made the whole process a little bit more fun. But, yeah, Clemson's going to route them.
I just, you know, I think Dabo Swinney doesn't – I mean, he's under the radar, one of the premier coaches in college football.
How do you think,
overshadowed by Nick Saban, of course.
How do you think he?
But they got a hell of a Brent Venables, a hell of a defensive coordinator. And they had a good. Their offense is good. I mean, they had a change in quarterback this year. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Notre Dame the same. There's some parallels between both teams, but I just think Clemson is their defense is it's hungry, and they're always, you know, they always reload.
How do you think Dabo eats his steak?
Medium rare.
Me too. I think he's like that. That's how I think he rolls. He's
got. Oh, you asked me that.
He just.
Did you put ketchup on it?
I'm just. No. Dabo won't put
ketchup. No, he's not a ketchup guy.
Dabo's the type of dude, I think, who eats it. And I did this recently. I've never done it before, but who eats every bite with some onion strings. You know what I mean? Like, he gets a little bit, and it changes the experience a little bit, but I think that Dabo does that. Okay, so we both got the Tigers.
Let me say this. Yeah, we talked about. Pat Mahomes. Mahomes. So we're talking about him, you know, putting ketchup on a steak. I was actually having breakfast yesterday, and I asked for oatmeal, and I asked the waitress. I said, "Do you have any peanut butter?" And she looked at me like, "That's so weird."
Oh,
so let me ask you wrong. This: do you put peanut butter in your oatmeal?
I don't, but I don't eat oatmeal that often. But I mean, if I was gonna eat a bowl of oatmeal, and you said, "Hey, man, I'm getting some peanut butter out. You want some of this?" I'd be like, "Hell yeah, I want some of that peanut butter. Let's party."
Well, she looked at me like I was some alien or something. I'm like, peanut butter. It's good for good protein.
Are you a chunky or smooth guy?
I'm all chunky.
Oh, I'm totally with you. Respect. 750 does things right. Okay, so we got the Tigers getting to the title game. This is it, Tony. Time. This is the moment, all right? You know, you got the Heisman winner taking on Tua, Oklahoma, Bama. What's it going to be? Maybe, you know,
First of all, did you see do you hear the Quinnen Williams interview when they were asking him? Oh, I wish we had that to play, but that's epic. It looked like, you know, they're asking him about Kyler Murray, and he's like, well, you know, he's good, but, you know, I Kyler Murray's like, I sense that he wanted to say he's overrated and wasn't that good, but then all of a sudden, I think Nick Saban just walked by and just got into his soul and said, you better shut the hell up. And he goes, I'm good. And I thought it was priceless. But back to the game. I think Oklahoma's going to have a hard time winning this game. I just think their defense is just not built to stop anyone, especially a team like the Tide. And I think that whoever's quarterback, you know, Tua especially, I mean, I think the storyline in this game is going to be the, you know, the OU's offense versus Bama's defense.
Definitely.
But I don't think the Sooners can win. Just the fact that they don't know how to play defense.
Hey, I mean, maybe you strap them on. Go play those extra two snaps. You know what I mean? for the Sooners.
Maybe I'd get paid more playing for Oklahoma.
Probably. Well, I've got the Tide too, but for your sake and for my better half's sake, I hope I'm wrong. I would love to see it, but I just don't think it's possible. Plus,
I'd love to see him upset him. I'm so tired of hearing how bad their defense is, and that they, you know, they're horrible. I mean, after a while, it's a state of mind. So, but I just don't think. Again, I don't think the Bama's going to beat the line. I think it's probably they win by maybe 10, but not 14. But it's going to be a tough task.
Well, let's hope for an enjoyable Saturday afternoon. That's all we can ask for. So, Tony, you and I will be back on Monday on New Year's Eve. I'll bring the cabbage. You bring the black-eyed peas. We've already got champagne here, so we don't got to bring any more.
I'm not much of a black-eyed pea guy. I mean, I have a heart. I know that that's kind of a ritual, but I'll bring something a little different, but I'll have to pass on the black eyed peas. Regardless, it's for good luck. So exactly. We'll hopefully have some good luck.
We're going to need it. So we'll see you all Monday. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy college football playoff. Enjoy week 17. This was the 750.
I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, CLAUDE, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.
Support for this show comes from Vanta. Dealing with loads of spreadsheets, juggling different tools, and having to do manual security checks, it can be a headache to keep up with today's compliance and security programs. Vanta is the trust management platform that wants to simplify things and bring all your trust-building efforts under one roof, making growth smoother for your whole organization. Vanta lets you automate up to 90% of compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, HIPAA, and more. Strengthen security posture and reduce third-party risk. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/vox. That's VANTA.com/vox for $1,000 off Vanta.